In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Tonight on the Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis, we have Elliot Serrano joining the show with music from Goran Ivanovich. And it's Friday, so that means we have our political roundtable of Eric Elk, Ken Jakubowski, and Dave Lundy. But now, live from the WGN Radio Skyline Studio, we are broadcasting live.
Night already. You know what? Thank God. I think we all need it to be Friday. Even though it's like the 4th of July put a Friday right in the middle of the week, and some people started the 4th of July celebration last Friday, but now you know, we all just head into the weekend at a different pace, and that's just fine. Some people are amped up. They went to parades. There's still fireworks going on tonight. I heard Violetta say she was going to the Rib Fest, which I think got rained out on Wednesday, so people are catching up on that. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio Showcase. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, on the Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis, and joining us is Elliot Serrano. We were supposed to have Bella on tonight.
She has
the Smart Dating Academy online.
That's her business. Smart Dating Academy, and it's because Sunday is the biggest dating day of the year,
which is incredible because you know you think of, and it makes sense in the sense, you know, at least a Valentine's Day isn't the biggest dating day. It's the highest pressure dating day of the year for relationships, and you have to buy somebody something. And apparently, experts do say that Sunday is the biggest, especially because it's according to Match.com, Elliot. I know you're confused.
Why is it? You mean Sundays in general or Sunday?
This Sunday, July 8th.
It's 20% busier than Valentine's Day, and it's a date of destiny based on two decades of analyzed user activity on the popular dating website, and they've predicted it as the hottest day of summer for online dating.
Right.
So, there you go.
Why, though?
I think it's more of a culmination of all the dating apps. It's
right.
The summertime. People are getting out there. I think it's also getting more comfortable. It's more of a momentum of the apps, I think, and all the dating sites than anything else. And so
some of the stats are so cool. When I was reading about this too, it said that four out of five of Bella's clients have actually gotten married.
On that date or just in general?
In general.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'm really stuck
on this. Some of the stats, July, you know, 8th. To go along with online dating, because it's the biggest online dating day of the year.
Well, I have all these notes, and I guess we'll ask him about her later. I was going to ask Bella about all these.
Yeah,
here's her philosophy. It's patience, positivity, and perseverance, which, Elliot, I think that you have done successfully in your dating life now. Okay, yeah, not
the
at
three,
all.
Three, patience, positivity, and perseverance.
Persevering.
No, the perseverance was a big thing.
Yes.
Yeah, you got to really persevere.
Are you still positive?
Yes, I'm positive now.
Yes. You got to be positive.
And patience was the big one. Patience is the big one.
Both
of you are in relationships. So I'm sure, but you remember the time when people would say, when are you going to find somebody?
Oh, yeah.
You know, when are you going to be, you know what I mean? Like, okay, give me. I mean, sometimes I don't need the patience. Y'all need the patience. The people around me.
Oh, yeah. You know. Don't listen to other people. Okay, and then as soon as you get married, everyone starts with the, are you going to have kids? Seriously.
Yeah.
When are you going to have kids?
I don't remember anybody asking me. I never was out of a relationship for very long just because I would tell myself, okay, I'm taking time. I'm going to be by myself. I'm not going to date anybody for a while. And then I meet somebody like, he's cute. And then start dating them. And I'm grateful that I never had to last long enough to make it into this app dating world of
Me
Tinder
too.
And Match.com.
Me too.
Yeah, and Bumble.
And I know it works. And I know people have great success stories. I've never done it. I've never online dated.
Well, what I love about Bella that we were going to talk about were a lot of really great tips that she had for folks. And I was, you know what, since it is the biggest dating day of the year on Sunday, I think that some of these actually might be, Elliot, because you were you were out there on the dating apps and trying to meet people. And I made the mistake of trying to hook you up with some people and matching you.
Oh, yeah.
I thought I could be like Bella. Yeah. It was quite awful.
Andrea, I've got stories to tell.
Bella and I went to college together, so I knew her when she was, you know, an accountant, and she worked for her dad's business, which is a huge successful company that her brother now runs, and she was always setting people up, but everybody she set up would last.
Yeah.
Even in college, a bunch of the girls in our sorority got married to the guys that she set them up with, And someone said, you need to start a business doing this. And it was right around the time of online, of all these online dating apps. And she's like, okay.
I'm just curious. Is she in a relationship?
Oh, yeah. She's been married for 18 years.
Okay. Because to me, it's always a funny thing that there are a lot of those people who are very good at setting other people up. They're just not so good at setting themselves
up. But Elliot. But Elliot, I introduced my best friend.
I don't mean you.
I introduced my very best friend to somebody I thought she'd be perfect for. And they've been married for 20 years.
All right.
So I, you know, when you hit it out of the park the first time,
get a little cocky.
You keep swinging for the fences.
Wow,
is all I'm saying.
Yeah, well, let's just say every time you tried setting me up, it was
I
wasn't getting a pitcher. I was getting a belly itcher.
Oh, see,
I wasn't getting a batter. I was getting a broken ladder.
We bring we bring it full circle. For those of you who are still looking for somebody and hoping to find a relationship, Bella recommends that you have 5 to 6 photos. So you want to make sure that you have a variety of backgrounds, and you also want to make sure that you have the perfect headshot. And by the way, use something that's current. Did you ever date somebody who didn't have a current photo?
Yeah, that happened.
Oh, God. She is so funny. When she comes on, she's going to spend some time, and she has some of the funniest stories about people posing, either wanting to pose naked or one of those selfies, you know, in the mirror from the waist up. And she's like, don't do that.
Yeah, don't do the bathroom
don't
ones.
Don't do that.
Yeah.
Don't hold an assault. Don't hold a weapon.
How about posing with your pet? If you have a pet, pose with your pet.
Yeah, but what if somebody's allergic and you have to ease them into it and they just write you off because you have a cat
I want to know
dog.
Right off
she's
the bat.
She's got good pet stories, too.
Right. Yeah, because I remember I was going to date someone, and then she said she was not interested in someone who liked cats. And I didn't even have a cat at the time. But I said, you know what? If you don't like cats, I love cats. I might be getting a cat at some point. No sense in trying. And she got angry at me for it.
You're like, this is not going to work.
I'm like, aww.
Do you know how many photos did you have on some of the dating apps that you were on?
Let's see. When I was on Tinder, I had, like, I think the minimum is 6. But I probably just did, like, 5. And I tried to have current photos, too.
And so did you have full body shots?
No, not as many, because the only ones I had were the gym ones. You know, when you go to the gym and you take a shot of yourself in the mirror, and apparently nobody likes those.
That's why, you know, yeah. I'm gonna hook you up. Well, not hook you up. I'm gonna introduce you to Bella.
He's dating. He's in a relationship.
I'm in a relationship now.
So you're okay now.
Yes. Yeah, I'm good.
Okay.
I'm set.
Because she's so good. She sends you on mock dates, you know, and then they report back.
I think they're all mock dates for me.
But she'll take your actual, you know, nice headshots of you, have a stylist, you know, get you all clothed up.
I could use a little style help, though, you know.
You look good today.
Oh, I appreciate that.
You look very summery. Got a new haircut. Yeah.
I will say this about the dating bit, and I have nothing but sympathy for women right now, because it's rough out there. I'm sorry, guys, the guys out there are not helping themselves. The bar is set so low right now for what women will accept from a man, and we still can't hit that.
Really? You think that women are lowering their expectations?
Let's just say women have been, men right now are like the Trump administration of male dating men. I mean, it's just that bad right now. And now, because it's been like that for so long, women are like, oh, well, okay. Because I have a lot of female friends, single female friends, and they tell me their stories of the things that the guys do. And I'm going, you've got to be kidding me.
Do they
really?
Do they cross the line even in the initial steps when they're texting? Because that's how it always starts, is you're texting with somebody. And sometimes you don't even have a conversation. Sometimes the entire relationship just is comprised of texting back and forth.
But that's the other thing, too, though, that I'm getting. And correct me if I'm wrong, but and anyone want to call in of that persuasion. I mean, no one talks on the phone anymore. I've dated previously women in the past who they say, don't call me. I don't want to talk to you. If you want to tell me anything, shoot me a text. And they don't want to hear it. They don't want you to talk to them. I'm like,
God, isn't that crazy? And that's how relationships kind of blossom, is that you spend hours talking and hours spending time together. And you know,
so I just don't get it. So there's this weird thing out there. But again, back to the guys. Guys, all they need to do, all you got to do is, you know, get a haircut, you know, brush your teeth, dress nicely. Don't go to your first date wearing a t-shirt and jorts, you know.
Hold the door open.
Yeah, stuff. Do say. Oh, and then it's the whole I've had so many guys. I'm hearing again my female friends telling me these things. Guys who, like, it's still nice for them to pick up the check, but now they don't. Even, you know, they've had their dates like pay for the first time too. Oh, wow. And I'm like, wow. You know, yeesh.
I Like I said, I cannot imagine being out on the dating scene right now. And one of the things that I love that I was going to talk to Bella about was that she also talks about not making a knee-jerk decision on the very first date if you don't feel that spark, because people think that like some sort of magic is supposed to happen. But at the same time, like the balance of knowing right away that this isn't going to work.
You know,
there's, and you have to figure that out. You have to like kind of get past what emotion are you feeling when you first meet somebody? Are you not giving them a chance because of the way they look or because of some of their opinions on things? Or are you just, you know, have expectations, as you mentioned, that are too high maybe?
Yeah.
You know? Did you all, without going into too much detail, did you all feel the spark when you first met your significant other?
I was dating somebody else when I met Steve.
Okay.
It wasn't.
Did you feel the spark though when you met him? Were you like, whoa?
I mean, I didn't even know. Hi, Steve. I didn't even really. He didn't, I mean, it's not like he didn't register. I'm like, oh, it's my friend Henry's friend. It was somebody.
I saw that movie. Where you're dating somebody and then you meet somebody else and then you're like friends with them. And then all of a sudden, boom, something happens. And
right.
Then, boom, you know. Yeah. So that was an Adam Sandler movie.
I didn't really. And he didn't even make the move when we were hanging out we got together. We talked more at the wedding of the two people that I set up, because I set up my best friend with his best friend and we hung out at the wedding together.
Wait, the guy that you were dating at the time?
No, the couple that have been married now for 20 years, it was two of my friends. So I introduced my best friend to someone who ended up being Steve's best friend.
Okay, got it.
They were both my friends.
Got it.
Yes. So we started talking at their wedding, but I had seen...
That is major risk there, too.
And it ended up being that I'm not as close of friends with my best friend, Kathy, anymore. But Steve is still very, very good friends with his best friend.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just she had a lot of trouble getting starting a family, and there was some resentment. And I understand it now, where she just, like, when I got pregnant with Griffin, she sort of removed herself from our circle of friends because it made her feel self-conscious about not being able to get pregnant. And so we have it that happens, you know, and there's nothing I could really do to make that better. We've got a little bit closer since, but she stopped talking to me then. And the emotions go so high. You get so upset and you feel like you're a failure when you can't get pregnant. And it's what you've like dreamt of your entire life. So I get it. You know, at the time I was really upset and angry that she didn't talk to me anymore. But, you know, to be honest with you, after I had Declan, it was hard for me to be around people who had able children and who had no complications and didn't have a baby who had to be hooked up to a heart machine and had to have medications all the time. So I kind of withdrew too. So I started to understand what she had been going through.
Mm.
Yeah. Didn't,
wow.
You didn't expect that answer,
that's
did you?
That's heavy.
Wow. So spark, Elliot? No.
Let's see. So who I'm with now? Yeah, we definitely had a spark in the beginning. We spoke a lot online first. But actually, though, this is funny. I had met her like a couple years ago through my job. And then somehow we rediscovered each other on Facebook through mutual friends, started talking again. I'm going, oh, yeah, I remember you. I kept going, I know this gal from somewhere. I know I've met her somewhere. And then we go, oh, yeah. And then she told me, oh, yeah, I met you at your job that one time. I went, oh, okay. And then we started talking. And then we got together for drinks. Then, boom, it was really nice.
So. There you go.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Let's take a break here. I think we have a musician coming in. I'm very excited to meet Goran Ivankovic. Goran Ivanovic, who I met in the elevator. I didn't ask him his last name. I would have been able to get his last name. More after this on the Patty Vasquez Show with Andre Darlis in a moment on 720 WGN. So we are hanging out in the Allstate Skyline Studios. It's Friday night. We always love welcoming musicians in studio. It is the Patty Vasquez Show with Andre Darlis. Joining us is Elliot Serrano. And Elliot, how many musicians do you think you've seen over the course of our 3 years doing Friday nights?
Oh, geez. Well, no, because you started the music
Monday.
Monday.
Right.
And then you ended up bringing it to Fridays to spare me because of the the Friday freak out was freaking me out. So then you brought the music in. I've seen a few dozen. I know that.
I would say at least 30.
Yeah.
You know, it's been quite a while that we've been bringing in musicians, and we are so thrilled to welcome Goran Ivanovic, who's in studio with us, one of the most versatile, skilled, and curious musicians in Chicago. Why are you described as a curious musician, my friend?
I don't know. I think I have, sort of like a wide emotional palette of things that I write, and it changes, it seems like every season I have to come up with a brand new material, and every season I start noticing that I'm writing different kind of music, and I think differently about music, you know. For example, 10 years ago, I was in a jazz fusion band, and, you know, music was very much like jazz fusion and, you know, really difficult to follow. And, you know, this season I'm writing more romantic solo guitar music, so it's just, you know, I have to come up with things to be entertained, you know, for my own, you know, sanity. So I think that's why people are, you know, eager to hear what I'm going to come up with next. You know?
I get the sense that you get lost in the music, don't you? More so than maybe other people do.
Yeah, yeah. Well, especially, you know, it's instrumental. There is no vocals, so there is a lot of room for, you know, I always think, what can I do to you know, paint some kind of picture or tell a story with, you know, in terms of, you know, in terms of harmony and melody. So I like to entertain myself first, and then if people like it, that's really nice. But
kind of bonus round
for
you.
I just do it for myself mostly, you know.
You've been in the Chicago music scene though for many years now, and I've seen you play Martyrs in different venues, and Elbow Room, and just small venues. Do you appreciate the smaller venues better, a little bit better? Is it easier to play?
I do, but you know, I when I go to Europe, you know, like last time we were in Europe, we were playing, you know, in front of hundreds of people, sometimes even thousands of people. So it's a different beast every time. And you know, it the venue allows you to be, you know, sometimes more, you know, personable, sometimes more dynamic. And it's a challenge that I like to play with. So,
yeah. How much has coming to the United States as somebody who had to flee another country from Croatia, is that where you're from?
Mm-hmm.
How has that impacted the way you feel the music and what you want to convey, what kind of emotions you want to share with the world, really?
Well, I think American you know, music lovers are very curious to other cultures. So, mm-hmm. you know, first thing that I noticed was that people were really interested in my background, you know, my musical background. And you know, it doesn't necessarily come right away, but when you start connecting the dots, and you know, what am I good at? What did I study? What's music from my background, from my backyard? Then it all starts making sense, and I think that there was sort of a natural way of constructing my style and my voice, and you know, all this blending. I'm not necessarily a fan of when people, you know, tell me like, oh, your music sounds like flamenco and it sounds classical and sounds Americana, but in a way it does. But you know, if there is a connecting line that perfectly makes sense, then it's okay to do that. So long story short, I think you know, audience really helped me craft my way you know, throughout all these years, and you know, I just, you know.
Can you feel the energy from the audience when you're playing something? You get the sense that what they're, you know, because back sometimes audiences will just not pay attention and just know when a song is over and they start clapping, right? And
yeah. I mean, I've done a little experiment. I was playing in Madison a couple of weeks ago, and it was an outdoor festival, and everybody's drinking and partying, and I was like, all right, I'll just, you know, I was playing with bass, drums, and guitar, and I was like, all right, I'll just open up the set solo and play really quiet romantic music, and
right.
And people flipped out. They really loved it. So I think that notion that, you know, you have to be loud and you have to play percussion on the guitar and you have to amaze the people, really doesn't have to be, even though that's the direction that's, you know, going right now. Everybody's playing very flashy. But if you give people something that has a lot of substance, they'll appreciate it.
Don't you think it's also the authenticity of it?
Absolutely,
You know, where it's coming from makes a big difference.
Absolutely. Like, it's a very interesting term. How is music authentic? You know, and
that's what I was going to ask too, mm-hmm. about the authenticity. Because you've played with trios, you've recorded duets, you've recorded with Andreas Capsalis as well.
Yeah. So yeah, that's a good point. Every time I'm playing in different ensemble, I have a, you know, different role. So right now, you know, it took quite some time to figure out how to write just for solo guitar, even though I've been playing solo guitar for, you know, 30 years. But there's something very specific, you know, about arranging.
Right.
And not overplaying, you know, not having too many notes, not having too much of just one thing, but really kind of bring out that palette where the guitar sounds the best. So, you know.
Well, we're going to hear more from Goran. When we come back, we'll have some music in studio to accompany our Freak Out Friday. It's the Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis. More in a moment on 720 WGN. Music with Goran Ivanovich when we come back. Coming up on Sunday, July 8th, that's this Sunday, you can catch our guest Goran Ivanovich at Space in Evanston. But right now he's playing live for us in the Allstate Skyline Studio. Here is Goran Ivanovich.
Wow. Oh, my God. Beautiful. Oh.
Goran Ivanovich will be performing at Space. Ooh. I have quite a loud echo there. I kind of know. Aubrey, leave it. I kind of like it. I'm gonna trade your chair out if you don't mind. We're going to hear some more music from you in a little bit. We've got Goran Ivanovich in studio with us, and he'll be playing in just a little bit. And again, you can see him at Space on Sunday. That's July 8th, and that's in Evanston. You can go to goranguitar.net for more of his music. Is that the right address? Excellent. So thank you so much for the lovely music. And it's a wonderful way to sort of start our evening. Ken and Dave, you guys can, are they not gonna join? I guess they're having their own meeting in the producer's
booth. They're going over the script for what's that from.
Oh, fair enough.
Yeah,
did you know what it's from already?
Yeah, I know where it's from. It's a good one.
All right,
it's a good one.
All right,
so I know Ken and Dave are going to get into this one.
All right, fine. Yeah. And then that's coming up after midnight. We will do what's that from, and you'll have a chance to win a gift card from Apt Electronics. And thank you so much. May I borrow your chair, Goran?
Yeah, of course.
Yes, thank you. Ken, you can grab that one on the end, because I know we've got a lot of it was a very strange week, because it was the 4th of July, so we had the holiday in the middle of the week, and we had you know, a lot of festivities, although it felt like the holidays really started last Friday. And I, by the way, Dave, how were both the Cubs games that you went to?
The Cubs game on the 4th of July was fantastic. That was the one that featured the Javi C slide, where you thought he was out, and then it turned out he was safe because he contorts his body and gets to home plate when he's still home. And then there was today.
What happened today?
We lost.
It wasn't as bad as the Sox shellacking.
It was not as bad as the Sox shellacking.
Yeah, you didn't think I was going to be able to say it. But
yeah, exactly. The Sox shellacking.
But it's something with the Reds. We just cannot
exactly.
Beat the Reds.
Yeah. It's the Reds. It's the lowly, sad Reds.
But they just demolished the White Sox last week.
Well, I don't know what it is. They must take some super strength pill when they come to Chicago.
Mm-hmm. Like underdog.
Always.
They're exactly. Like
underdog. They wear it in their rings.
But just so you know, Dave, I mean, statistically speaking, if I can't remember the name of the actual, where the stat comes from, but the Cubs are favored right behind the Houston Astros to go to the World Series this year.
Is that right, Ken? Are you hearing the same numbers?
I think the Astros have like a 16%.
Did you see the look on his face?
Ken is not buying
the,
this.
The top three teams in terms of odds are all American League teams to win the World Series.
Not talking about winning the World Series. It's about going to the World Series.
Well, it would be the Cubs from the National League. Yeah, and then there's Houston, the Yankees, and Boston that are the favorites in that order in the American League.
We're not talking about Las Vegas here. We're talking about the stats nerds, the baseball stat nerds.
It's the National League is wide open. Yeah. I mean, if the Cubs could win it just as easily as the Philadelphia Phillies.
So, well, it's funny that you talk about stats because Ken called me at about 6 o'clock tonight. He's like, "You got to see these numbers. I don't know what's going on with the polling numbers." And since we do save most of our heavy stories for the week, we've been talking about democracy every single night this week. And so this kind of is a culmination of, rather than talking about democracy specifically, but about the big issues that affect our democracy is kind of what we're discussing. And Ken, you had earlier thought that perhaps the numbers didn't look great. People were talking about this big blue wave and maybe it wasn't going to happen. And there seems to be a shift. And the thinking might be that it's in relation to attitudes about immigration.
Yeah, well, and I have one more data point that I think illustrates this effectively. On December 26th, 2017, so what, 6 months ago plus, Democrats had an advantage of 50.1 to 36.8. So what is that, 13.3 percentage points? They had a lead. And this is on the generic ballot, where they ask a person, if the congressional election were today, would you vote for a Democrat or a Republican? And for the Democrats to have any hope of regaining the House on taking back control, which means they have a Democratic Speaker of the House, they control the agenda, they had all the committees, etc., you really need about a 6 percentage point lead in the generic ballot or above. And the bigger you get, the bigger the wave is. Well, that shrunk from 13.3 down to 3.9 on May 22nd.
And do you think some of that had to do with how well people were responding to the jobs numbers, to the idea of tax cuts? You know, some people were getting bonuses.
I think it was initial tax cuts and economy back then. And then from May 22nd to today, it has now gone from 3.9 back up to 8.3 for the Democrats, which if it stays there, is going to be a difficult time for Republicans to regain, to take hold, continue to hold the House in the midterm elections. And if that keeps going up, and I mean, just since June 25th, it's gone up. It was 6.1 on June 25th. It's now 8.3. You know, that's great news for Democrats. Now, it can move all over the place. But what I was interested in, and I wanted to get Dave and Eric and Elliot's reaction, and everybody, Patty's reactions, Andrea's, why, since May 22nd, has it shifted in the Democrats' direction? Is that all immigration?
Well, a couple things. I want to add a couple more data points because, the Cook Political Report, which is Charlie Cook is a longtime strategist. He does this political report. And he has found that currently there are 62 highly at-risk House seats. Of those 62, 56 are currently held by Republicans.
Yep.
Those are big wave territory.
And a number of them in California,
California. Right. So that's one data point. Another data point is that immediately after the child separation policy came out, Donald Trump dropped in his Gallup approval rating by 9 points.
Really?
By 9 points. His approval dropped from 45 to 41, and his disapproval rose, and the net was 9 point difference in 1 week, and it was purely the result of the child separation policy and people seeing kids, people who don't watch Fox News, seeing what was happening at the border. And so I think I actually think that the immigration issue, as long as the Democrats stop with this abolish ICE nonsense,
yeah.
The immigration issue will play to the Democrats' advantage as we move forward.
And they're also finding that these numbers, the numbers were at about 2,000 children had been separated from their families, and now they're hearing that it might be closer to 3,000. And
more than 3,000. We learned today that they had more than 3,000. We thought it was 1,900. When was it more than 3,000? They announced today, oh yeah, well we're now close to 3,000. And we looked at each other and said, what?
And that subcontractors were bringing the toddlers to their homes from the ICE agents and different people that were in charge.
And that the government is saying that they cannot comply with the court order to reunite these families in time, and that they need more time.
Because they don't know where the kids are. They didn't keep good records. Can you believe this?
And some children are coming here.
It's extraordinary.
They're being sent to different cities.
Chicago.
They're at the Heartland Center, yeah.
Are there some, there's some 80 in Chicago?
Right.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the current numbers are. Yeah. Because initially there were 66, and of those, one-third were under the age of 5.
Has this, at this rate, because people talk about, well, this happened under Obama and nobody cared.
It didn't.
But there was some separation. There were Obama, you know, was a president who saw some of the greatest numbers of deportation in the history of our country.
Well, what Obama
he was known as the deporter in chief.
Right. Yes.
And what Obama did is he separated male from mother and child. So he kept mother and child together, but the dad went off someplace else. That's what
Obama makes it a lot better.
That's what happened in the Obama administration.
Yeah. Well,
so I think one of the things that'll be interesting to watch is watch California. There is a movement to get on the ballot a kind of a referendum that would repeal the gas tax in California. And their gas tax is pretty significant. And if they are successful in doing that, it'll turn out a lot of Republican voters, which will help on some of those congressional races.
Well, let's take a break here. Ellie, I don't know if you have any thoughts on the numbers that Ken's talking about and what might be affecting that, why there might be a bit of a boost for Democrats who are running for some of these seats.
No, my only thought is I'm amazed that Republicans who say the government can't do anything right are willing to turn over all this child care over to the government. So, you know, that's just my thing.
More after this on the Patty Baskett Show with Andrea Darlis. We're broadcasting from the Allstate Skyline Studios. More when we come back on 720 WGN. Friday night on our Freak Out Friday. Well, yeah, it makes sense. That's when you would freak out on Fridays. You do it on Friday. It's the Patty Baskett Show with Andrea Darlis. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios. By the way, Elliot, are you digging the new studio high above the river here?
It's taking me some getting used to. Okay. I mean, this is my first time up here, and it's kind of neat. It is a great view. I will say that. It is pretty cool.
It's very nice. So, it's kind of a nice way, Ken, don't you think, to talk about all the heavy topics of the week is by looking out at our beautiful city.
It's very clean. It smells clean. It has that clean smell.
Well, the Tribune Tower was starting to get a little bit, Andrea, admit it. It was starting to get, they'd given up on the building.
I think so, too. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Especially toward the end.
Oh.
We'd find certain critters and things that shouldn't have been there. This is all nice and new.
This has that new studio smell.
It does.
It's like a new car smell, but with more volatile organic compounds.
Right, freshly painted.
And everything's so clean. The carpets are brand new.
Yeah, don't tell anybody I spilled coffee on my way in here tonight, running in here.
You have to deal with Marlene.
Yeah, well, get that carpet tile right out there. How you doing, Eric? What do you think?
I think it looks awesome. It smells good, you know, save for some of those water cups that have been on the, you know, desks for weeks or something. So.
Yeah, no, I made sure we took care of that. No, okay. Walter Jacobson, I think, was advised that perhaps nobody else was going to clean his plateware. So we took care of that.
It was cleaned. Didn't someone clean it?
Yeah, somebody cleaned it. They did, but then it was also removed to remind him that perhaps not to leave that out in the middle of the common area. Yes, he was growing penicillin. I mean, maybe he was working on his own little science project. I don't know. You know, just growing some mold for everyone to enjoy. We were talking about the upcoming elections. And November seems like a long way away. But when you think about the fact that the president is now going to choose the next Supreme Court justice, you know, the Republicans now dominate all three branches of government. They have the judiciary, they have the executive, and they have the legislative. And by the way, to that, if there is any vulnerability coming up to the fall elections, will they try to get get things done? Can they try to get things done before that, since they have all three branches without any sort of roadblocks for them? Or they're just going to wait until after the elections?
They've been getting a tremendous amount done from a deregulation perspective, kind of under the radar. When I say under the radar, stuff that hasn't hit the front page of the newspapers. It's been seismic what they've done from a deregulation standpoint, working with the agencies. But in terms of major legislation, no, that ship has passed until after the elections.
Okay. So
I mean, they had their last shot at immigration, and now everybody's going to go off and start campaigning. Once you get to August 1st, people are gone. Although the Senate, McConnell is keeping Democrats. McConnell doesn't want Democrats home campaigning, so he's going to keep the Senate, I think, until late August.
Yeah, that's what he claims. We'll see if that actually comes to pass. Because here's the funny thing. Not only do Democrats have to be out there campaigning, but so do Republicans.
Yes.
So
President Trump announces his pick Monday, which he says he's going to do Monday night. How soon do you think confirmation hearings will start?
I'd say Tuesday morning. It takes some time.
Within a couple of weeks. Yeah. He'll go around and meet everybody one-on-one. Right. They'll do a dog and pony show. And it'll be probably 2 to 3 weeks before, I would think.
Yeah, they say he's leaning towards one of the two white men on his list of three.
Oh, really? I thought he would have gone with the woman.
I thought so, too.
I thought he was going to go for the woman
as
well.
In Las Vegas, the heavy odds-on favorite is, is it Etheridge?
Really?
I thought it was
Or Eskridge, whatever.
Yeah.
Wasn't it adorable that Schumer was like, ooh, come on, have Garland Merrick.
Merrick Garland,
right, yeah.
It was cute.
It was cute.
Pointless. Just like most of what.
He's like, come on. Hey, not for nothing. Why don't you go ahead and put the guy in that maybe the guy that should have had a shot at it.
It was cute, but feckless.
So
just like much of what they've been doing.
Not to mention futile.
Yes.
Yes. Eric, what are your thoughts on the fact that, and by the way, a listener tweeted at me last night because I was talking about how, as I mentioned, the Republicans now have control of all three branches of the government. And I asked, you know, why are Republicans so angry? And I guess that's kind of a broad brushstroke to paint, because not all Republicans are angry, just the ones that text at us, and not just me, but all the shows. And you know, it was funny because I went through this texter's or this tweeter's account, and it was like, you know, STFU to Dan Rather. And Ed Schultz died yesterday, who was a broadcaster who actually had started, was a Republican when he was a young man, and was dating a woman who was a social worker. And in order for them to carry on the relationship, she said, I want you to come with me to a soup kitchen. And once he started learning about what people went through, he became a champion of workers. Anyway, this guy like said, you know, he was a leftist Democrat who, you know, all this stuff. And then he's like, rest in peace anyway. But I, you know, but my point about being angry, why is there such a demand for people to shut up about their criticisms when it comes to government? I kind of thought that was the, you know, part of being a citizen is to challenge things and have conversations. And while it might sound like complaining or whining, it's also expressing what your frustrations are with the way things could go, right?
Yeah, I think there are a number of Democrats who are forgetting what the Democrats in the Senate did back when George W. Bush was president around 2001 in terms of filibustering a number of his D.C. Circuit Court appointees, starting with Miguel Estrada. And some of the memos that leaked out on that, strategy memos, were that the Democrats did not want Bush to be the first president to be appointing Latino judges.
Oh, they wanted that. They wanted to be able to have that, right? That sort of
according
claim
to the memos
fame.
That had been leaked from the Democrats, yes.
They wanted to be part of their legacy. I see.
Well, but the number of filibusters exploded. Of judges under Barack Obama. There were more cloture motions under Barack Obama than in all previous presidents combined.
And nobody
judges.
In the audience knows what you just said, so I'll just put it this way. Republicans wouldn't approve one Democratic judicial appointment.
There were seats that went unfilled during the entire administration. Yeah. Heads of departments that just never got filled. I have to take a break before the news, and we'll carry our conversation. It's going to be more music from Goran Ivanovich when we come back after the news. But first this. Can't touch this, Andrea.
I love this. Remember this?
MC Hammer.
Man.
It is Music Friday on the Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis. We are broadcasting live from the Allstate Skyline Studios. We've been really honored to welcome to studio musician Goran Ivanovich, who is one of Chicago's most skilled versatile guitarist, and he is playing on Sunday night at Space in Evanston, which is, again, what a fantastic place to see musicians, both locally and nationally. They not only do they have a wonderful place to enjoy music, but they treat their musicians like rock stars, no matter who you are. Yeah. Have you ever seen the green room there?
I have. Oh, my gosh. And Goran teaches. Can you imagine him being your teacher?
I know.
Oh, no pressure there.
When you're teaching, do you? It takes a lot of patience, I would imagine, right? Because you know what you want to convey.
I'm an extremely patient person, so you know. I think bottom line is it takes years to develop a certain skill as a guitarist, as a musician.
Right. If you don't want to practice, it's not going to come naturally. Right?
Yeah, it's practicing, it's commitment, it's a lot of things. So I'm very, very happy to have a chance to teach. You know, I've taught many generations now. Kids that went and did this professionally. So I'm very happy with what I've done as a teacher as well.
Wonderful. Well, it's great when somebody is as skilled and talented as you, is willing to sit down with people and find their musician too. That's lovely.
Absolutely.
Well, we'd love to hear some more music. Take it away, Goran. Yeah. Simply lovely. Wow.
The coveted sitting ovation.
Thank you.
That's awesome. Goran Ivanovic. He's performing at Space in Evanston this Sunday. That's July 8th. You can go to goranguitar.net to find out more about him. And we have a text from the 630. Please ask Goran if he still performs with Jamie Gallagher, my son's former guitar teacher. Do you still perform with Jamie?
No, Jamie's a good friend, but we only played a couple times together. But,
okay.
Yeah.
That's the thing is the music world, the community, when you find somebody that you jive with too, it's kind of a wonderful thing, isn't it?
It is, and it takes takes two characters to really gel together. You know, this Sunday I'll be joined with another Chicago guitarist, Fareed Hawk, and he's maybe 15 years older, so there's a little bit of generational gap, and he was a mentor of mine for many years, and we found a way to understand each other as players and as guitarists, and sort of have to be careful about each other's musical needs, what they expect out of music. So we found a good way to write together and perform, and it's been real pleasure.
Can you tell me a little bit about that, what it means to take care of each other's needs? Because that's hard to explain to people when you're artistically trying to achieve something and you can't always articulate that in a way that might be that might land.
Yeah, well, you know, music and you know, I think guitar in particular is such a, you know, you have the classical group, you know, that's like a little club. Then you have the jazz club, and you have very traditional clubs and very progressive clubs, and in order to understand somebody musically. In my case, they have to be composers and arrangers as well. In case of Farid, he, you know, that's exactly what he's been doing. He's been playing a lot of you know, so-called world musics. So, you know, if you're exploring flamenco and at the same time, you know, music from India and music from Balkans and, you know, even Latin American music, then we have something to talk about. You know, in my case, I always looked to work with people who, you know, sort of have same musical tastes. So,
is the fusion hard though? You know, say somebody has that Middle Eastern sound or the Indian sound. Is it hard if they want to say I don't want to use the wrong term, but if they want to jam with you or to play with you, is it hard with that fusion or because you're so accomplished it makes it easier?
Well, I mean, you know, there is sort of the generic jams, and then there is sort of the true authentic jams that you know, improvisation exists pretty much in every musical tradition. Now, classical guitar on its own, it's not really improvised, and that's something that people sort of neglected over the years. And I think the newer generations, you know, especially younger kids, are skilled in improvisation and jazz and classical music, and those worlds are now blending together. So I think it's a very exciting time for your guitar. Yeah.
And how much has changed over the time that you've been, you know, performing and writing when it comes to even using, like, social media, like, trying to market yourself? Like, that's another whole element to itself, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm not very good about that, but, you know, I'm lucky that, you know, I've been playing consistently and traveling and playing. I think something happens when your work is, you know, different than others, and, you know, I can name so many guitar players that are, you know, maybe copying each other and copying a certain trend that's popular, that's trending right now.
Right.
You know, we talked about that a little bit earlier.
That's what we meant by authenticity. Mm-hmm. So when you can right. See where someone's mimicking, you know, as a comedian, I'll hear that, yeah. You know, they'll see what's the most successful or most popular is. And they're like, well, in order to be good, I have to sound like that.
Right.
Rather than really sharing yourself.
Yeah. And I think there's always been room for, you know, characters and personalities in music. And when you look who is playing, everybody's got, you know, a very specific type of personality and something very unique they can offer. In my case, I think just the fact that I'm releasing, you know, album a year and you know, coming up with new material I don't think it's the best music in the world, but I enjoy the process.
It's
of
it's really good. Yeah,
I was gonna say I really enjoy the process of finishing a song, committing to an idea, and expanding on that. So that's the most fun part for me.
Well, we are committed on welcoming you back anytime you'll join us and really treat us with the wonderful music that you have. That was spectacular. And it, you know, when you mentioned that when people try to tell you what your music reminds them of, I'm going to tell somebody else, oh, you remind me of Gorin.
There you go. Yeah,
that way.
Absolutely,
because you are incredibly unique. So thank you so much for sharing that.
Thank
with
you
us.
So much. Thanks.
Again, go to Gorin Music, GorinGuitar.net. That's GORAN Guitar.net. He'll be playing at Space in Evanston this Sunday, July 8th, and we look forward to seeing you again, my friend.
Thank you.
More in a moment on the Patty Baskin Show with Andre Darlis on 720 WGN. You know, I've been wanting to do one of these 23andMe DNA tests.
Oh.
And have you done it?
We did that, yeah. On the Cochrane show, he bought it for, well, he bought it for a strange reason. He's like, oh, I can't figure out all the women on the show. So he wanted all of us to do the DNA testing.
Wait.
I went, that has nothing to do with our mindset.
That is
it's
a strange reason.
DNA and our genetics. So myself, Mary Vandeveld, and Mary Sandberg all did it. And where you have to spit.
Wait, just the women? Why not the men?
Yeah.
He might have done it too.
Okay.
He might have done it, too.
Because that makes it almost as weird as President Trump demanding or offering $1 million for Elizabeth Warren to have her DNA test if she runs for the presidency in 2020.
Oh, God.
And okay, so my family said that I went to a weird place because, but it was the way they were relaying the story to me. Steve was talking about how President Trump is demanding that Elizabeth Warren get swabbed. And then he goes, and then he threw in some Me Too joke. And I was like, what kind of a DNA, where are they taking the sample from that President Trump's, President Trump. President Trump said he had to be gentle with her because it's a Me Too.
This whole Pocahontas thing, right? Because he wants to see
But he distinguished between the fake Pocahontas and the real Pocahontas.
Right. But why? I don't understand the speech. And so I will be the first to say that I heard it all out of context. My son and my husband relaying it to me. And I'm like, so is he making a rape kit joke? Is he making a swabber from her vajayjay joke?
No.
Is he, why did he throw in the Me Too movement? They had to be gentle with her.
It was just an entire can of worms. I think it started out, right? I mean, and back me up. It started out with him saying, I'm going to debate Pocahontas. I want to find out if she's really Pocahontas. He wants her to do the DNA swab, the saliva swab, right, to find out if she's really Native American.
Okay. But where does the Me Too movement come? He said to be gentle with her.
I think that's kind of, you know, he picks up the vibe from the crowd, and
right?
I think where he went was what's the used to be at Fox, now at NBC, Kelly.
Megyn Kelly.
Megyn Kelly. Yeah.
He said something during the debate about during the campaign.
Bleeding?
Yes.
Yes.
He was kind of going in that direction.
Orifices,
I think that's the direction that he took it.
So that's why I ask. That's what I'm saying. So is the implication that she's going to get swabbed while she's in the stirrups?
Here's the quote.
Read the quote.
Here's the quote. I should almost read this with I'll read this with no inflection.
Read the quote for me.
Okay, here's the quote verbatim.
Okay, verbatim.
We will take that little kit, but we have to do it gently because we're in the Me Too generation. We have to do it gently. And we will very gently take that kit and slowly toss it, hoping it doesn't injure her arm. And we will say, I will give you $1 million to your favorite charity, paid for by Trump, if you take the test and it shows you're an Indian.
Honestly, I did not interpret it the way you are interpreting it, but I don't have as dirty mind as you do.
But I don't know if it's dirty. I just don't understand
why Me Too came
out. Well, because I didn't hear all the quotes. I heard was that he wanted her to be swabbed, and that it was a Me Too movement.
Donald Trump at a rally. It's inherently nutso.
It's very strange. Well, okay, yes.
I have a bigger issue with this whole thing.
Yes.
I can't wait to hear this one.
No, I do. So with all the DNA testing, and you know, you have to send in your swab, and it has your name
or your
and
spit, everything. Right?
Okay, whatever.
Yeah, it's
well, yeah, because you like do it inside your cheek or
you
something,
just,
right?
It's a teeny, teeny, teeny little. I don't even want to say a cup. It's like the size of a teaspoon, and you just into it.
The one I did, and I haven't sent it, but you scrape the inside of your cheek, you swab it. So there's different ways of doing it.
Okay, so what are they doing with all this data?
Exactly. What do they do with the data? Mm. What's the chain of custody of your spit on the swab?
Yeah.
How many people control it?
How do we know it's actually your spit?
You don't know.
Right.
You're supposed to seal it.
So the data, I mean, look, ICE can't even keep track of children. How do I know 23 is probably doing a better job than ICE.
Listen, if I worked for one of these companies and I knew that it was Elizabeth Warren's swab coming in for this, I'd call her up and say, give me $100,000 and I'll make you out to be actually Pocahontas.
100%.
You will be Pocahontas, reincarnated.
What do you need to be? That's what you will be.
You will be Pocahontas.
Well, good. We now know Ken's ethics. $100,000 will buy you whatever you want.
Exactly. The results you want. Yes.
So like, you know, watching Handmaid's Tale and like these other shows, right? It's like, ooh, man, somebody could really create something devious and have a file on everyone who's done this.
That's true. Well, do you remember?
I hadn't thought of that. That's really disturbing.
The ice cream test?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
It's low fat.
Whether it was low fat. Yeah, I always wondered where the data goes on this stuff. That's why I got off Facebook. You know, I don't tweet as much, and I'm certainly not sending somebody a swab of any of my. Anything of mine.
Do you pay your tolls with cash now, too?
With coins, yeah.
Have you taken the location off your phone, Ken?
Mm-hmm. No, I have not.
You still Google mapping it?
I still know that they're out there.
I want to know this. This is what no one said anything about. Where's Trump getting the $1 million? Because he says he's not taking a salary.
Doesn't he always offer $1 million, like $1 million for Barack Obama's birth certificate?
But, and he doesn't pay the $1 million unless the Washington Post calls him on it.
Oh, I see.
Because that actually is what happened when he offered he was going to give the vets, remember when he was supposed to do a debate?
Yes.
And he was going to give the vets $1 million or $5 million, whatever it was. And then David Farenthold from the Washington Post, who did a remarkable job during the campaign of following up on all of the nonprofit claims that Trump had made. And it turned out Trump hadn't given a penny, and this was a month later, 2 months later, whatever it was, and he kept badgering him until finally Trump gave the $1 million to the vets. But then it turned out Farenthold could not find any actual charitable contributions that Trump had personally made in like 10 years. But so, yes, he always promises $1 million.
Yeah, basically, Trump treats his not-for-profit promises just like he treats payments to subcontractors.
Well, and the other thing is, even in the language he uses and the things he references, when he in this speech in Montana, he talked about how he was the first Republican president to win Wisconsin since Eisenhower, and he said even Reagan didn't win Wisconsin. I understand that because Reagan won all the states except for one when he was running against Mondale.
Minnesota and D.C.
Yeah, and that was because of Mondale in Minnesota.
I remember that election night.
Yeah, I could imagine you would.
And what about Richard Nixon? Well, 1972.
And also Nixon won it in 1972.
Total wipeout.
Yeah. And then
George McGovern.
Yeah, so that's one thing that he said. And then now how do Republicans feel about the not just the fact that he misremembers history, or and it's not that he got it wrong. He has said this repeatedly, that he was the first Republican president to win Wisconsin.
He also said he was the first Republican president to win. It was the largest majority that he won of any Republican president, in like 50 years. And of course, it was completely untrue.
But I wonder how people feel about his references to George H.W. Bush, who was recently widowed. And part of his campaigning when he was running for president was about how communities, how we can all help each other, how we're all so very different. Michael, can you play that audio of George H.W. Bush? From, I believe this is from 1980. This would be 1988 when he was running. Do we have that audio?
We're a nation of community, of thousands and tens of thousands of ethnic, religious, social, business, labor union, neighborhood, regional, and other organizations, all of them varied, voluntary, and unique. This is America, the Knights of Columbus, the Grange, Hadassah, the Disabled American Veterans, the Order of AHEPA, the Business and Professional Women of America, the Union Hall, the Bible Study Group, LULAC, Holy Name. A brilliant diversity spread like stars, like 1,000 points of light in a broad and peaceful sky.
So what is that all about? So Trump was making fun of that speech, I guess, that concept.
Oh, the kinder, gentler Republicans. I remember it well.
So I just wanted to help President Trump because he was wondering what that was about. Well, that was what that was about. Does that help anybody?
So the president wants to take shots at a 94-year-old former president who actually wanted to applaud and encourage people to volunteer. And right. Do something good in their
and
community.
And to be very inclusive.
Eric, yeah. What is that all about?
But wasn't that?
Why would you do that?
Yeah, but wasn't that a response, really, to Barbara Bush? I mean, of course, W's, but to Trump, all the Bushes now are the same. Because Barbara Bush came out kind of against what Trump was saying. And it's like, and then, of course, Trump Jr. jumped on that. And then now it's like the Bushes are considered the enemy.
Well, he was even coming after them during the election and you know, riding him for 9/11, saying that was his fault, that it was George W. Bush's fault. What were you going to say, Dave?
Sorry. He was a little right on that. But anyway, the fact that he was against low energy Jeb and the fact that he was against that he called, said, you know, George W. Bush was to blame for 9/11 and et cetera. I mean, clearly he doesn't like the Bushes and the Bushes don't like him. And it was that wasn't really a big shock. Now, that said, going after the 1,000 points of light, it's like, what? Donald Trump is the random thought generator. And so, like, he'll push a button and, like, something comes out. God knows where it comes out from, the deep recesses of his brain. Probably when the 1,000 Points of Light speech came out, he was thinking, what's that about? Because why would anybody volunteer, loser? And then that stuck in his craw somewhere, and here he had an opportunity to say that.
Eric, did he mention anything or anybody? Did he talk about the tariffs and with, you know, our now our relationship with Canada, where we stand there, and China's retaliation and how that's going to affect our workers here?
Good luck going to buy a TV in the next few days.
Prices is it that fast?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh,
yeah.
Darn.
Yeah, actually, there was a great story.
Electronic components, stereos.
That fast? The tariffs are hitting that quickly?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, and actually, soybean prices in the U.S. are plummeting, and the prices in Brazil, which is the second largest exporter of soybeans, are rising. So apparently what Trump was really trying to do is make Brazil great again.
And that's hard because in agriculture, obviously, they're so reliant from season to season. I mean, it really is a feast or famine business.
In Illinois, it's particularly hard-hitting.
Yeah. It's huge.
Yeah. Eric, what are your thoughts?
I thought it was interesting. I don't know if anybody saw the piece that David Brooks did in the New York Times today on Fred Rogers. And I thought it was actually kind of the timing was interesting. Especially based on Trump's, you know, I was reading it this morning and seeing Trump's comments in Montana. I mean, he's just he has no class, and he's just very mean-spirited on everything. And, you know, reading this piece by Brooks on Fred Rogers, Mr. Rogers, and the way he kind of interacted with people, it really says a lot, and I think it's something we need to get back to.
Wait, well, there's a Fred Rogers.
Did Trump go after Mr. Rogers?
Well, no.
But
I mean, who else?
It's early. Hold on.
Yeah, just wait.
But there's a Mr. Rogers documentary right now.
It's supposed to be the best movie of the year.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I saw it. It is a fantastic movie. Rogers goes on and on about being kind to people and that you should cherish what is best about yourself. And he said everybody was special. And in the movie, they have an excerpt from Fox News, because apparently, and I didn't remember this, apparently before Fred Rogers died, there were a whole group of conservatives that declared that everybody feeling like they're special and the snowflake thing was all Fred Rogers' fault.
Oh.
So there were essays written about how it's all Mr. Rogers' fault. And I think it was Steve Doocy who said that Fred Rogers was an evil, evil man. Because of what he did to children.
Okay. On that note, we're going to go to the
And he was a conservative. He was a conservative guy, actually. Yeah.
Fred Rogers was a Republican.
Yeah. He was a lifelong Republican.
Has anybody seen the movie? Who's in here?
I
have. No. Oh, you have.
Can I take my daughter to it? 8-year-old daughter?
Oh, absolutely. You should. It's fantastic.
Is it out now?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know. There are those scenes when Rogers is in Nam. I don't know.
Hold on. Getting the tat.
She hasn't seen Star Wars, but she's going to see Mr. Rogers.
Watch out.
Can I take my daughter to see the Mr. Rogers movie?
Yeah.
You are so sweet, Ken.
Next week, Mr. Green Jeans is out.
Live from Chicago, Illinois, here is another episode of What's That From?
Every week we read a scene from a classic movie so that you can never watch it the same way again. I think one of my favorites that we destroyed was probably Casablanca. We did a pretty good job with Dr. Strangelove. Some Like It Hot was one of my favorites that we all did together.
It was last week, right?
Yeah, that was just last week.
And I like Thelma and Louise.
That was great.
That was good.
It was perfect. 312-981-7200. When you know what movie we are destroying for you forever, we have a gift card from Apt Electronics for you. So 312-981-7200. Take it away, Roger.
All right. Just as a director's tip to everyone, a frenetic pace. There we go. The scene dissolves to the Hopper executive office, in which Hubert is on the phone raging.
Are you commissioner of safety or hoodlums? Taylor's hoodlums are even running riots in the street. Even children aren't safe. Hospitals are filled. I won't stand for this violence.
And in the Smith home, the place is still whirling. The kids are working away. One of them is speaking into an amateur radio excitedly with a circular in his hands.
Tell us,
The Taylor machine is framing Jeff Smith. Here's Jeff's story. Put it down.
He breaks off as shouts are heard outside. About three gorillas are pushing their way into the office. A group of kids has evidently been fighting them from the time they entered the house. The kids are yelling, "What do you want in here? Who are you? Get out of here." The men throw off the kids and advance to both the press and the amateur radio. One of them takes a small object that looks like a hand grenade out of his pocket and hurls it at the press. There's an explosion.
And drums.
The men duck and run. A couple of kids clutch their faces and scream. The press stops. Simultaneously, one of the other gorillas has thrown himself at the amateur radio. He starts pulling it apart. Next, Ma is on the phone.
Sanders, is that you, Sanders?
And we see Saunders on the phone.
Yes, Ma? What?
In the Smith home.
Yes, bombs, acid, children hurt all over the city. Tell Jeff to stop. It's no use. They'll just kill him if he goes on and everybody else. It isn't worth it, Saunders.
Saunders is seen paralyzed, holding the receiver as Ma's voice screeches through. H.V. Kaldenborn is seen again broadcasting.
Senator Smith has now talked for 23 hours and 16 minutes. It is the most unusual and spectacular thing in the Senate annals. One lone and simple American holding the greatest floor in the land. What he lacked in experience, he's made up in the fight. But those tired boy ranger legs are buckling. Bleary eyes, voice gone. He can't go on much longer, and all official Washington is here to be in on the kill.
In the Senate press gallery, Saunders and Diz are seen.
No, sir. There's no compromise with truth. That's all I got up on this floor to say. When was it? A year ago, it seems like.
Diz, I'm afraid terrible things are happening. I've got to stop him.
They be listening to him. Anything might happen now.
Just get up off the ground. That's all I ask. Get up there with that lady that is up on the top of this Capitol dome. That lady that stands for liberty. Take a look at this country through her eyes if you really want to see something, and you won't just see scenery. You'll see the whole parade of what man's carved out for himself after centuries of fighting and fighting for something better than just jungle law. Fighting so he can stand on his own 2 feet free and decent like he was created, no matter what his race, color, or creed. That's what you'll see. There's no place out there for graft or greed or lies or compromise with human liberties. And if that's what these grown-ups have done to this world that was given to them, then we'd better get those boys' camps started fast and see what the kids can do. And it's not too late, because this country is bigger than the Taylors or you or me or anything else. Great principles don't get lost once they come to light. They're right here. You just have to see them.
Mr. President, will the senator yield for a question?
Will Senator Smith yield to his colleague?
Yes, sir. I yield for a question.
The gentleman has said repeatedly that he is speaking to the people of his state. He has been waiting, as he so fancifully puts it, for them to come marching in here in droves. Would the gentleman be interested in knowing what those people have to say?
In the press gallery.
Here it comes, Diz.
On the floor again.
Yes, sir. You bet I would.
Mr. President, have I permission to bring into this chamber evidence of the response from my state?
Is there objection? You may proceed, Senator.
Page boys!
Now a number of page boys enter, carrying down and placing before the president's rostrum many wire baskets filled with telegrams. The View picks out Saunders.
I can't stand it, Diz. I can't stand to see him hurt like this.
Public opinion made to order.
Yeah, tailor made.
And Senator Payne walks down and points to the baskets.
There it is. There's the gentleman's answer. Telegrams, 5,000 of them, demanding that he yield the floor. I invite the Senate to read them. I invite my colleague to read them. The people's answer to Mr. Jefferson Smith.
Stop, Jeff, stop!
Jefferson has gone wearily to the baskets. He seizes handfuls of telegrams at random and glances at them. He sags in despair, almost falling.
I guess this is just another lost cause, Mr. Payne. All you people don't know about lost causes, Mr. Payne does.
He said once they were the only causes worth fighting for, and he fought for them once for the only reason that any man ever fights for them, because of just one plain, simple rule. Love thy neighbor. And in this world of today, full of hatred, a man who knows that one rule has a great trust. You knew that rule, Mr. Payne, and I loved you for it, just as my father did. And you know that you fight for the lost causes harder than any others. Yes, you'd even die for them like a man we both know, Mr. Payne. You think I'm licked. You all think I'm licked. Well, I'm not licked. I'm going to stay right here, fight for this lost cause, even if this room gets filled with lies like these, and the Taylors and all their armies come marching into this place. Someone will listen to me. Someone.
The chamber whirls in front of Jeff's eyes, and he pitches forward to the floor. People get to their feet automatically all over the house, and there is dead silence, except for Saunders, who utters one shriek as she gets to her feet and then stands, unable to move.
Oh. All right. We got our listeners lined up. Well done, everyone.
Very. Wow.
Yeah.
Just so you know, that random applause was for Dave's acting.
That was pretty good. Yeah. Yeah. I got a little verklempt there.
Yeah, you
thank you.
Yeah. Even like passed out on the floor just to send it home.
It's only like I've seen this movie 150 times.
This is one of my favorite movies.
Yeah. Love this movie.
I love this movie.
You kind of started sounding a little like Mitch McConnell there.
Yeah, well, you know,
Clinton.
A little George Bailey.
Well, I lost my impression like a third of the way through, and then it just went off randomly.
I think I know the movie. Can I guess?
No,
you can't guess.
Can I give the name of the actors?
We have to have a listener guess.
That's going
to
be my backup question. I have some pizzas to give away. I've got weather stations. But our grand prize for this game tonight is the Apt Electronics gift card. Jamie, what's that from?
Is it 1776?
Oh.
No.
Oh. You know... Wow, we have to be that harsh with Jamie. Jamie, that was a really good guess because it was the 4th of July this week and we were talking about democracy all week.
Which is also an excellent movie and also one of my favorites.
It is a great movie.
A lot of singing. People don't sing.
No.
I've got a prize for Jamie. I'll give her a prize.
What's her prize?
I've got two tickets to the Meow Meetup. If Jamie, if you love cats, you can go to the Meow Meetup in Rosemont.
Do you want to go to the Meow Meetup, Jamie?
Sure.
All right.
That's all right. Cute. Hold on the line, and Michael will get your information. That's for the Meow Meetup for
Jamie. July 21st at the Rosemont Convention Center.
All right, let's see what we have. So Jamie is getting the Meow Meetup tickets from Elliot. Candace, what's that from?
Mr. Smith Goes to Washington.
That's right.
Yay. Oh, wow.
Very nice.
I'm surprised. I thought it was the candidate.
Oh, boy. Oh,
no,
boy.
I'm getting looks like they
or
think
all
I'm
the
nuts.
President's men.
Candace, do you want, by the way, for our listeners who are on hold, Ed and Pat, don't go anywhere, because if you know the backup trivia questions, you'll also win a prize. Candace, do you watch this movie every once in a while just to remind yourself of integrity and what you want from a politician?
No, oh, yes, it's one of my favorite movies. Love old movies.
I do too. What's one of your favorite old movies? Like, mine's His Girl Friday is one of my favorites.
Oh, believe it or not, I like Ombre.
Which one? Ombre?
Ombre.
All right. Yeah. I'll have to check that one out. I have not seen Ombre. I'll check it out.
Paul Newman, yes.
Oh, hello.
Which is different from Bad Ombres.
I do like
Ombre. If I remember right, Paul Newman doesn't wear a shirt in that movie, right, at times?
Okay.
I think he's shirtless a few times.
Count me in.
That's what you remember about it?
Thank you for the recommendation, Candace. Hold on, and Michael will get your information, and we will hook you up with a gift card from Apt Electronics. Pleasing people since 1936. Go to abt.com. for more information. And Ed, I have a backup question for you. Who plays Saunders in Mr. Smith Goes to Washington?
Saunders. It was Jean Arthur.
Yes!
Ooh, nice.
Well done.
Very nice.
She is one of my favorite actresses too. There's just something so compelling about her in this movie that you don't know. It's just she's so smart and brassy and just all of it.
Yeah.
I love her.
I thought it was Roy Cohn.
Oh, boy. All right, Ed, you've got a weather station coming your way. Hold on, and Michael will get your information, and we will send out a weather station. Hold on, let me make sure I have the information about that prize for you. And I have one more. I've got one more prize to give away for Pat. Hey, Pat, how are you doing tonight?
Just fine, thank you.
Do you happen to know who plays Payne in this movie, in Mr. Smith Goes to Washington?
Only person I know is Jimmy Stewart.
That's okay. That's our,
a good guess.
No, Jimmy Stewart, right.
I mean, he's in the movie?
Yeah,
he is in the movie. Who is he playing? Do you like old movies, Pat?
Yeah, somewhat.
Somewhat, because my mom watches Turner Classic Movies all the time, so it's one of her favorite channels. All right, well, maybe you'll win something from What's That From next week, okay, Pat?
Thank you very much.
Thank you. I'll take it from somebody else if anyone knows who played Payne in this movie. It's not an easy one.
Can I give a hint?
Yes.
Casablanca, one of the other movies you suggested we did a wonderful job on. This individual plays a really critical role.
Yes, exactly. So that's a wonderful guess. That's a wonderful hint right there. I like that. 312-981-7200. I do have a Lumel Nottage because that apparently is a harder question than Saunders. I love Gene Arthur.
I couldn't believe he pulled out Gene Arthur. I mean, Gene Arthur, I couldn't get Gene Arthur.
Oh, really?
That was fantastic.
Oh, that's wonderful. And I don't want to talk about any other movies that she's in because who knows if Roger will pull those out from the hopper later on. But Mr. Smith goes to Washington. I love Frank Capra. I just love Frank Capra movies.
Mary!
So that's...
I originally wanted to go 7 days in May. I don't know if any of you guys remember that movie.
Love that movie, Roger.
Very tense thriller, political thriller. But
most people,
unfortunately, a lot of these scripts just are not available online. So
I told Roger, pick a movie from the 80s, and he's like, what? No, newbie.
No, we did Weird Science. Was it Weird Science we did?
We did something that none of us...
Rollerball.
Rollerball, there you go.
Car Wash.
Car
Wash from the 70s.
It's funny you're mentioning some of these movies because I was, Nick DiGilio was surprised that I wasn't a big fan of Blazing Saddles. And it's not just a product. I don't know if I would have liked it when I was a kid. Okay. Maybe I would have. But that movie, I would say like Porky's. You mentioned Porky's.
Yeah.
I've never seen Car Wash. But there are certain things that like you watch now and you're like, oh, uncomfortable.
Does it hold up?
So last night I watched Yankee Doodle Dandy, which is part of my July 4th tradition, and I had to record it.
Don't tell me it's offensive somewhere.
Don't tell me how it ends.
Yankee Doodle Dandy's got the family in a minstrel show in blackface.
That's true.
Is that Mickey Rooney?
So does
No. It's James Cagney.
There you go, James Cagney.
So does the movie Holiday Inn with Fred Astaire and Jimmy Cagney. They do Abraham Lincoln's Birthday.
Yeah,
and Fred Astaire does Mr. Bojangles. Yes,
Blazing Saddles.
Yes,
one of my first dates. I went to Blazing Saddles. We walked out about 30 minutes into the movie.
Why'd you walk out?
They're all sitting around a campfire farting. I did not find that funny.
The funniest part of the movie.
Let's get out of here. This is crazy.
What do you think we're doing in here?
You walked out of Blazing Saddles.
Yes,
oh, my
it.
God.
Absolutely hated the movie.
Ken, just when I think your movie taste can't get any weirder, I've never seen Star Wars. Blazing Saddles. And Patty, I'm concerned about you.
Not liking Blazing Saddles?
Okay, you know what? I'll hop on their bandwagon. I thought it was okay.
Yeah,
I wouldn't put it in my top 50.
I mean, I went to see it because the Detroit Lion, famous Detroit Lion football player Alex Karras
was in the movie.
Yeah.
Mongo.
It wasn't a funny movie.
Mongo only pawn.
Wow.
Game of life.
Telegram just, for Mongo.
Not funny.
Candygram.
Eric,
Candygram.
Eric, where do you stand on the Blazing Saddles? Right? So,
oh, my God. Next, you guys are going to tell me you don't like Airplane.
Oh, I love Airplane.
I like Airplane, yeah.
It's okay.
With Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Can I make his head explode? Can I? I didn't really like Field of Dreams.
Oh, I hated Field of Dreams.
Oh,
what?
I loathed Field of Dreams.
Yeah.
Field of Dreams, I would have walked out of. seriously.
Michael.
Well, thank you, Michael.
I have never seen Field of Dreams.
You might like it.
But I haven't gone because my father died. I think it'd be too emotional for me, so I didn't go.
I had a friend. As a comic, you travel to like all over the country, small towns, and we happened to be going through the town in Iowa where they film Field of Dreams. And I was with a comic named Sidney Adeniyi, and he had never seen Field of Dreams. And we're on our way home. We've already done the gigs. And I'm like, I've never been. I've got to go to Field of Dreams. And it made no difference to him. We're like, the bleachers are there, and I made him like pretend like he was falling off the bleachers, and I ran the bases. And it was funny because when we were leaving, a line of cars were coming up the driveway. I'm like, oh, they're coming. But I but then Nick D showed Field of Dreams on the big screen, and Sydney came and saw, and I started getting really nervous while we were watching it because I built up this movie that I love. I've loved since my childhood, and he liked it, but it is really corny
It's exceptionally corny given the fact that they have Joe Jackson hitting left-handed, and he was a right-handed hitter.
That's actually what did it for me.
And Ray Liotta said that bothered him too. Like, he had offered to try to switch. They had told him what they were going to do is they were going to flip the film so that it looked like he was batting. They were going to try to do, because Lou, I think that the same thing happened with the Lou Gehrig film with Gary Cooper, that he also was not a lefty.
But he did bat lefty in the movie, though.
They flipped the film so that it looked like
Why don't you just cast a guy who bats left-handed to play Lou Gehrig?
Ray Liotta.
Batting is such a, I mean, obviously, yes, Joe Jackson, I think is he still number three in hits? How many? I think he's number three in leading all-time hits.
I don't know.
And that part they haven't taken away from him because, you know, he's just not in the Hall of Fame. But I think his record still stands at Cooperstown as a number three all-time hitter.
He's got some data points.
I mean, that's pretty remarkable when you think of a guy who his career was over in 1920. Because 1919 was when they threw the game, the World Series. But I believe he played another season, and then they tried them.
There's a great book, by the way. I can't remember the name of it right now.
Eight Men Out?
No. No. It shows it basically makes the case that the White Sox learned how to throw the World Series from the Chicago Cubs a year before.
Number three.
During the offseason.
Yep, he still has the third highest career batting average in Major League history and the sixth highest single season total.
Isn't that amazing?
Which was what? What was that sixth highest season total?
It doesn't say.
Yeah,
oh. I'll have to do some more clicking.
Hey, I got a question for you guys.
Yes.
For anybody out there, which left fielder in baseball since World War II has the most outfield assists?
Dale Murphy.
That's a good guess, but no.
It's not a bad guess.
There you go.
It's incorrect, but it was a very good guess.
Daryl Strawberry.
No, he played right field. That's also incorrect.
Left field.
312-981-7200. Since Ken's thrown out a baseball question, I will give you a Lou Malnati's if you know the answer. More after this on 720 WGN.